In today's Champions Uncovered podcast, Carla Vassifal speaks to Chris Fenning, who makes it easier for us to communicate at work. He helps experts talk to non-experts, teams talk to executives, and much more. Chris's practical methods are used in organizations such as Google and Mato and have appeared in the Harvard Business Review. He is also the author of multiple award-winning books on communication and training that have been translated into 16 languages. Find out how Chris can help you at chrisfenning.com.
Welcome to the Champions Uncovered podcast. It's all about igniting greatness through meaningful movement, and in particular, conversations that move. My guest today is Chris Fenning, and the purpose of this discussion today is the business of communication and why clear, concise communication matters, specifically answering the question, are you communicating the right way? Welcome, Chris.
Hello, Carla. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Excellent. We're really excited to have you on the show today. And just to give the audience a bit of background on who you are, Chris is an author of two award-winning books, The First Minute and Effective Emails. He's also a writer of business articles, numerous articles, and I must say, from firsthand experience, an excellent trainer. He's also got a book called Make Training Stick. But in today's conversation, we're going to focus on first minutes and how to start conversations that get solved.
Wonderful. Yes. How to start those conversations that actually get the results you want.
Just before the podcast, I did mention I am a bit nervous for this podcast because Chris is such a clear communicator that I'm feeling a bit under pressure. But this is definitely a topic that you're passionate about, Chris. And if you could just give us a bit of background on why you decided to dedicate your time and expertise to this topic of communication.
First of all, you do great. I've listened to a number of the episodes on the show. You've got absolutely nothing to worry about whatsoever. So relax. It's going to be a fun conversation. When it comes to why do I focus on business communication as opposed to any other possible topic in the world? Well, it's because it's been part of my journey from when I was very, very young. I talked a lot. Now, that's not great communication, but it is what I did. And I thought that was great communication. And then throughout my career, I was very fortunate to have mentors and advisors and managers who helped me appreciate the difference between talking a lot and communicating well. And I used to be an engineer. That was my background and training. And I've worked in defense and telecoms, web hosting, health insurance, and a bunch of other industries around the world. And no matter where I went, where I worked, in 30 plus different countries, six different industries, the fundamentals of communication were almost always the same. And the frustrations at work were all the same. Sitting in an ineffective meeting, no matter what country you're in, no matter what industry you're in, is a painful experience. So what I learned over 20 years in an employed career and the advice that I got and the training that I took led me to realize there were some gaps in the way communication is taught. And the gaps tend to be at the fundamental levels, one of which we're going to talk about today, which is we're often told how to be clear and concise, but we're rarely, if ever, told how to be clear and concise. And so that's what prompted me to fill that gap and write The First Minute, which is a literal formula for how to be clear and concise, particularly at work.
Your book, The First Minute, is an excellent and, I must say, clear and concise way with techniques and methods. It's very practical, and that's also your training approach. It's a very practical experience, and you also made it really fun, the workshop that I attended. Why is the first minute so critical in a conversation?
First, you said the magic word, the fact that it's practical. Thank you so much. For me, there's no higher praise than being told the stuff is practical, because that's my goal, to give people practical, usable frameworks. So when it comes to the first minute, what is it and why is it important? Well, for the first, when we start talking to people at work, we know what we're going to talk about. We know what we want them to do with the information, and we know, hopefully, what the key message that we want to get across is. The trouble is, the people we're talking to have absolutely no idea about any of those things. And if we don't make it clear at the very beginning of our work conversation, if we don't make it clear what we're talking about, the people we're speaking to will probably have one of the following three questions in their minds. What are you talking about? Why are you telling me this? And what's your point? And if we don't answer those questions preemptively, if we don't give the answers to those questions before they're asked, our audience actually spends their time wondering about those questions, which means they're not paying attention to what we're saying.
There's so many conversations happening, and there's this overwhelm of technology and voice notes and WhatsApp, and communication doesn't even seem to be in one place and organized. So what tips that you can share with us today that you can organize your communication? Exactly what you said, like if I don't know why you want to speak to me or what the purpose is, a lot of people just go onto a voice note and start talking. But what is that? Is there a
Yes, they
step by
do.
step process?
Yes. So the first three things in a message, once you've gone past the pleasantries, once you've been a human and said, "Hi, how are you doing? Hope you're well. What I want to talk to you about is," at that moment, there are three things that we should all say. And we need to provide context, intent, and a key message. And in the book, The First Minute, these are wrapped up in a small framework called framing, because they frame and set up the conversation you're going to have. So the first part is context. What is the topic? Am I talking to you about next week's team meeting? Am I talking to you about a particular customer account? Am I talking to you about an event or a sales report? I just need to say the thing, that theme or topic that we're going to talk about. And that tells you that everything else I'm going to say relates to that. So the context is, I want to talk to you about next week's team meeting. Then we move on to intent, which is what I want you to do with the information. I either want to get your help, I'm looking for a decision, giving you a heads up that something is coming, but I need to tell you what to do with everything else I'm going to say. So, hey, Carla, I want to talk to you about next week's team meeting. I'd like your help with the attendees. So, two very short sentences. And then the third element is the key message. This is the most important thing that I need you to know. Now, I'm not cramming the whole conversation into just a few lines. I'm just giving you a headline so that you can understand what we're going to be talking about. And a key message could be, I'm not able to get everybody I need into the meeting. So, hey, Carla, I want to talk to you about next week's team meeting. That's context. I need your help with with the attendees. That's the intent. And I'm having trouble getting people to agree to come to the meeting. And now you know what that conversation is going to be about. You can ask me questions. I can go deeper into any one of those things, but you are fully prepared because you know what I'm talking about, why I'm talking to you, and what my point is.
I think in your book, you call it the framing technique.
Yes.
Just on the topic of meetings, there are so many meetings, and I actually saw a picture with a mug and it said that meeting could have been an email. So on the
Yes.
on that topic, sometimes you sit in meetings and you're like, that definitely could have been an email in 3 points, and we could have been a lot further down the project just with that communications. If you can just share with us the difference between a meeting and an email.
Yes. So there are a couple of different guidelines to help differentiate between the two. The first is, if the meeting is not going to produce an output, then don't have the meeting. And an output is something that can be written down or printed out. And that might be a decision, or a list of ideas, or three options to solve a particular problem. The output might be an agreement between the people in the room for what we're going to do next. But there's always should be an output. If the meeting is just delivery of information without any real opportunity for discussion, that should have been an email.
In terms of an agenda before you set up in a meeting, is this critical? Because there are so many meetings happening. I'd love to chat to you. I'll set up a meeting with you. That's usually how the conversation goes. And
Yes.
you open up your diary without really understanding the agenda. Should you be sending an agenda? Where does that fit in terms of the context of communication?
Well, when it comes to agendas, I've now said the word agenda more times than in my entire meetings training program. I run a half-day workshop on effective meetings, and I only say the word agenda two times. And there's a little challenge to see if people keep track of that. And if I don't do it, then I have to buy everyone a coffee and a donut or a piece of fruit. The reason that and I'm now saying the word agenda so many times. The reason that I say agendas aren't part of the training is an agenda by itself is not a valuable thing because it generally is just a topic and a name. It doesn't tell anyone in the meeting what is going to be produced or why that topic is being discussed. And those are the valuable things. So if we're going to have something that tells meeting participants what the meeting is about, if you're going to have an agenda, here's what I recommend are the three things that should be in it. And it's one sentence for each. What is the topic? What is the purpose of the meeting? And what output will be produced? So we might have a meeting, and the topic is Project Everest. The purpose of the meeting is to choose which of the three paths we're going to move forward with. The output from the meeting will be a decision about the path we're going to take. Everybody who receives that, and it should be in the invitation, everybody who receives that will know what the meeting is about, why we're having the meeting, and what they're going to produce. And the reason those three things are so valuable is it helps the audience, it helps the invitees know whether or not they should be in it. Am I going to contribute to that purpose and output? And if not, can I select out so I don't have to be there? Or at least ask, why am I being included? I don't understand what I'll contribute. It also provides all of the participants the opportunity to measure the progress towards the output. If you're halfway through the meeting and you're not halfway to the output, you know you've got to change something. But if you don't have a clear output, then you can never measure whether you're anyway towards it or not because there's no clearly defined goal. So that's what should be in an agenda if you want to have one, but it should always be in the invitation. And I'd like to go back just to the previous question for the difference between the meetings and emails, if I may. Can I give a quick example on that?
Yes, please do.
Great. So I talked about when a meeting should have been an email, but when it's the other way around, when should an email become a meeting? It's when an email chain, whether it's with one person or multiple or two people or with a larger group, when it's becoming unclear and it's obvious that progress is not being made in that particular format of communication, you may find that getting people together for just 10 minutes to have a conversation will overcome the hurdle, which in email, there's no tone of voice, context is missing, you've got people reply in different orders. All of those things make it a very unnatural conversation style. So there can come a point in an email chain where, like, we're just not achieving the purpose, we're not producing that output that we want. Can we please get together in some visual, audio, physical format so that we can have a conversation for this purpose to produce that output? And so that's why those three things also help as a gauge to say, shall we move this out of email and get it into a meeting?
Your work is really around purpose because it's very purposeful. Your communication is purposeful. Your training is practical and purposeful. And also, to get results, you really need purpose. And as you mentioned, to have a clear and defined goal. So, if I'm going to speak to somebody, what is the goal? What is my role? What is the progress being made? And whether you're a champion in business, a champion in the community, or a champion on the sports field, progress and tracking and measurement is all parts of the journey. And
Oh yes. Yes, it really, really is. Yeah, any kind of athlete doesn't go out and go, "Oh, what training should I do today? Well, I'll just fancy a bit of running right now and maybe I'll do some weights or practice the hurdles." They have a very purposeful structure for what they want to achieve and then they go out and do it. And as you mentioned with my training, with the books, with communication in general, whether it's the world according to Chris or anyone in the world going out to communicate, a little bit of preparation and a little bit of structure will make a big difference in the outcome of that communication. If we always wing it every time, which is what most of us do, we go up to someone and then like, oh, I want to talk to you about this. And then blah, we just start winging it and stuff comes out of our mouths. If we do that, it takes longer to get to the point. We might not get to the point or multiple points that we want. We may forget to ask for the thing that we need from them. Spend a little bit of time planning what you want to say. Have a little bit of structure in that communication, and you're far, far more likely to get your message across. And if you get your message across, you're more likely to get what you need from that conversation.
Well, there's so much value in purpose. And in the rushed world that we live in, just to take 2 minutes before your meeting to actually just write down exactly what you said now and, you know, have a plan and have a structure. And then what is the result that I want from this communication? What is the result that I'm working towards? Or is
oh,
this
yes. And well, it's, you mentioned the 2 minutes of preparation before a conversation. And I often get sort of pushback during training. Well, that's 2 minutes of preparing. Well, my conversation would only take 2 minutes anyway. And I sometimes run an activity in the workshops where I didn't do this when we were together, but in some of my other workshops, I run an activity where I get people to estimate how long they think a conversation will take, and then they have the conversation. And it's always wrong. It is always, we grossly underestimate how long it takes. Those 2 minute conversations are usually 5, 7, or 10 minutes long. And then we ask people to spend 60 seconds preparing with just this framework we talked about earlier. What is the context, intent, and key message? What is your topic? What do I want from them? What is my main point? 60 seconds to jot those down. And most of the conversations then become 3 to 5 minutes long. So that 1 minute of preparation saves 2 to 7 minutes out of the rest of the conversation. Imagine doing that multiple times a day, every day for a year. The time savings are incredible. Plus, we stop frustrating people, because they're not trapped in a conversation wondering, why are you telling me this? So a little bit of preparation, it makes such a big difference.
Almost like an uncovered value add is time management. Because a lot of us feel like we don't have enough time, but just by communicating better, you actually manage your time better, you manage your energy better. And also as a leader, most people, maybe if you're not communicating effectively, don't want to even attend your meetings because they know that it might be a bit of a ramble.
Oh, yes. Oh, so you get that. You see the invite pop up and think, oh, do I really have to go to that? Whereas effective meetings that have clear topic, clear purpose, and a defined output, we're going to produce this thing, then people know why they're there, and they're usually much better meetings.
And just in your workshop, I'm still raving about your workshop because of the fact that I've been to so many and you almost feel like it's going to be another run-of-the-mill kind of workshop. Yes, I'll definitely learn something. I'll definitely walk away with something. But it's just the, you know, by having such clear communication, you have more energy. And I think that's what organizations need. They speak about wellness and they speak about fatigue and burnout. But it's actually the leader's job to create energy in the room and through vision and communication. Communication is a critical skill for leaders. So how can you create energy in your communication?
The first thing is make it as short as possible. The longer that we spend talking, the more energy drains out of people's bums into their seat in the room. And you can just, if you watch a room full of people with a leader standing up on stage and they start talking, you can see people begin to just sit further down in their seats and the energy disappears out of them. And then they start to fidget. If it really goes on, they get very fidgety and there's this curve of, oh, there's a lot more movement in the room, but it's not good positive movement. So be short is the first thing. And the second is make it interactive in some way. I don't mean put in some cheesy icebreaker. I mean, if you're there to interact with a group of people, interact with them. I refer back to the earlier piece of if you're just delivering information with no interaction, that should have been an email. So if you're delivering a message and you're looking for feedback, you want genuine questions, you're trying to get people to come up with ideas, build in the activities. When you're planning a meeting, when stick with meetings for now, if you're planning a meeting, think about what are the activities that enable people to contribute. And not just go around the room and say what you think, but is it a 60-second pairs discussion? Hey, pair up with each other and come up with two or three ideas to solve this particular problem. And then we'll write them down and discuss and evaluate. Do something that gets people actively involved in what you're communicating.
You've covered like collaboration because you're getting two minds to think about a situation, connection, and, you know, we don't really speak to each other. It's just like passing each other by in a situation. So really connecting and then helping people to start thinking. So it's a critical thinking skill. And
oh yes, you've got a room full of people's brains. You know why? What and the cost, the literal cost of an hour of people's time sitting there. What is the value? What is the purpose of that session? And collaboration, getting their input. It all comes down to why are we having this session? What do we need to achieve by the end of it?
As you said, like in your communication, it's not only increasing the communication, but it's making the communication more effective. It's not just having many conversations, it's having purposeful conversations.
Yes, absolutely. But effective. Communicating for communicating's sake, it's just noise. It's like having a radio on in the background. It's just sound. There should always be a purpose. And it could be to entertain. It can be to inform, inspire, encourage, elicit feedback and information. It could be to solve problems. There's always should be a purpose. And if everyone in the room doesn't know what that purpose is at the start, you're going to fail in that communication.
As you're talking, I thought of the fact that when there's silence, there's also maybe a bit of an iceberg that happens. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, could you expand on that a little bit?
If you have a self-driven team and they know what they need to do and they go on a mission, for instance, it's that gap. So say there's hybrid working, where you're working in isolation. And you mentioned it right in the beginning of the conversation, is when I'm speaking to you, you don't necessarily know what I'm thinking. I think that's where the iceberg maybe comes in terms of the silence between not picking up the phone. I think when you have that distance, it also creates an iceberg, because now you assume through my email or the meeting that I had in the tone, I'm just trying to see if there's a connection to like office politics. And I know I am diverging the conversation a bit, but could that
That's
possibly
okay. That's fine. Yes, it's the iceberg analogy is we only see what 10% of the iceberg above the water, and then there's this enormous amount of other stuff that we don't see. And yeah, that's a good analogy for certain types of communication. In fact, for all types of communication, because you don't know, as we're talking now, you don't know my motivations, how I'm interpreting what you're saying. You could ask a question, and in my head, I could be thinking, this is the best question in the world. But I don't say that. I might do with my body language, but I might also be thinking, what on earth is Carla talking about? And hopefully, if I was being professional, I wouldn't be showing that with my body language. And by the way, the questions are all great, so no worries there. But there's other stuff going on behind the scenes. Now, to get specific to the work situation, one of the biggest offending situations for this is sending someone a quick text, whether that's through Slack or Messenger or a one or two line email, and just firing off a few words and thinking that we've communicated. And what the other person receives is a line of text. And in that text, they don't know our tone of voice. There's no emotion in it. There's no background detail. And that person can then interpret and fill in the gaps, that other 90% of the iceberg. They will start, possibly even unconsciously, adding in extra interpretations and evaluations of that message to try and build a complete picture. And there are some silly examples that we can use. If I said, I'm busy at my desk and I'm working on a report for next week. And I could just send you a message and say, hey, I'm looking for some numbers for next week's report. But you might be working on three different reports. So which one? I think it's obvious because you and I are working on a report. I'm only working on one, so I send you, I'm looking for numbers for the report, but you're working on three. So which one am I talking about? And that simple misunderstanding can lead to you doing work to send me stuff I don't need because it's for the wrong report. And that's where we assume we've communicated well and we haven't. And then the other person has to fill in like the rest of that iceberg and they just start adding stuff and we get assumptions and go off in different directions and get all kinds of things mixed up.
Thank you for explaining that so articulately. That was what where I was going with the conversation. But just
So we got there. But we went back and forth. So at the beginning, this is a great worked example. I wasn't sure I understood the question. So I asked you to add some extra information, and that helped me get it. If I'd leapt straight in to try and answer the first question, there's a good chance I'd have gone off in a completely different direction, misunderstood, talked for 3 or 4 minutes, and you'd have come back and gone, that wasn't quite what I wanted to quite what I wanted to know. So asking some extra questions, we have that exchange, that dialogue. That is one of the best things we can all do to make sure we're on the same page. Ask clarifying questions, get a little bit more information, and then we can answer with a greater chance of success.
that is an excellent tip, and there's so much value in questions because the questions help people to think exactly what they want to communicate and the value of thinking. And a quote that I heard, like thinking into results, because it all starts with the thinking and then you get the results from the communication.
Yeah, results that happen to be right but without any thinking is kind of dumb luck. It's just good luck that that turned out right. That little bit of thinking, that little bit of preparation and planning makes an incredible difference.
Just on the topic of pitching an idea, because we do have entrepreneurs that listen to the podcast, what effective communication tip do you have on pitching an idea? I'm sure you've got many in your toolkit, but if you can just share one idea.
Oh, one idea. There's a whole library and an amazing array of good resources out there in the world, certainly not just my own. But one tip for pitching ideas. One thing that will make a difference, no matter what your topic, who you're pitching to, and it's understanding the perspective that your audience cares about. And there are only three perspectives we have at work. The user or customer, business, and expert. And the user is what does it mean or do for me? The business is what does it mean or do for our organization? And the expert is how does it do the thing that it does? And we evaluate everything at work with one or more of those perspectives. So if you're pitching an idea, pitch it to the perspective of the audience. And do I have time to give an example?
Yeah,
Great. So
absolutely.
let's say you were pitching to a couple of investors, one of whom is an investor, another person is going to be operating your idea, or they're going to actually be involved in your business or in your solution. The perspective of the investor is what is in it for our organization. They care about the money. So you need to describe your idea in terms of what it will return for them. The person who's involved in delivering it is more likely to care about what does it mean for the end user or customer? How is that going to produce something valuable for the business? And then if you have a couple of technical folks or a couple of experts in the room, they probably care about how is this thing going to work? That is the third perspective. So when pitching your idea, make sure that you're not going in with lots of here's how it works. If your audience cares about what does it mean for the customer, you have to adjust your message to be from their perspective.
So you've got three perspectives in the room. If I can just summarize, to research your audience beforehand, if you can, to understand who's going to be in that room, And then also just put yourself in the other person's shoes, because sometimes when you're preparing a presentation, it's like, what is the message I want to get across? So I think that is also valuable, but what is the audience going to hear from that message?
Yes. And you mentioned audience research. And I'm actually not a big fan of audience research because it's too easy to go down the, well, what is their history? Do they like tennis? How much do I need to know? And even though we've got LinkedIn and other ways to find out about people, it's actually not a great way to discover what your audience cares about. And the more people in the audience, the exponentially more time it takes. So here's what I suggest instead. Learn to be really, really brief. And the second method in the First Minute book is called a GPS summary, how to summarize anything in three lines. And if you're able to do that, you can then pitch your idea and hit all the perspectives in just a few lines. Here's an example. I was working in an insurance company, and customer satisfaction was a very high important metric. And somebody was pitching an idea to improve customer satisfaction, but they needed funding for it. So they had a bunch of managers in the room, and their pitch to be successful needed to hit lots of different people's buttons, different people's perspectives. So they said, I've got an idea. Our goal is to get 99% customer satisfaction, and we're currently at 94%. We want to close that gap. The problem is, it's really hard to get those last few percent. I've used goal and problem there. And then, so what I'm proposing is that we do this method. If we do, we're going to one, improve the customer satisfaction rating. That hit the customer perspective for that manager. Then they looked at the finance manager and said, and that means customers will stay with us for longer and we'll get recurring revenue month on month more than we do now. That was the financial business perspective that they cared about. And then they turned to the experts in the room and said, and we can do this using our existing technology and services. They hit all three perspectives in one sentence each.
Also, if the research isn't available, so you just use goal, problem, and solution, and in that solution, cover the three different perspectives.
Exactly right. And there are really only three. So you're looking for the one that's most valuable. If it's all about angel investors or entrepreneurship investors, the money, like what's in it for the business? It's going to likely come down to money or time. For the customer, it's going to be quality of experience, engagement, satisfaction, and so on. There are a few things that you can do, but just focus primarily on customer and business perspective. Leave the expert stuff for the next follow-up conversation for how are we going to do it. You're selling an idea, customer and business perspective are the two best ones to get your message across.
Brilliant. I love the focus is on others and not on yourself. Because as soon as you shift that focus, you actually get your message across. You have a conversation that moves.
Yes, we do. Because we care how it works. We're all features and not benefits. It's another great thing is focus on benefits, not features. We get so caught up in the amazingness of our widget, of our idea, of our magic box. But no one else cares how the magic works. They just care what it does, not how it does it. So shifting that perspective to be from the audience, you absolutely nailed it there, Carla. Think about what's important to them and say that.
In closing, what one practice would you like to leave with the audience that will move them into action?
One thing. Okay, well, I'm going to use the one thing. Pick one particular technique or method you want to use to help your communication, and then focus on how you can practice it regularly and repeatedly. Communication is not a skill you learn in a workshop and leave. It is something that you have to apply and practice over time. So pick one thing you think would be helpful for you, and then practice it and practice it and practice it deliberately. And then when you've got it, pick something else and practice that.
Champions Uncovered hopes you've gained some valuable insights and practical tools for you to use in your everyday life. Subscribe to this podcast channel so you can be notified for more Champions Uncovered podcasts.